Welcome, everybody, to episode 251 of the Metabolist 2 podcast, which features myself, Ben.
And I am David. And tonight, today, right now, we are ready to talk about the Empire of Death.
Death. Dun, dun, dun. Whoa, Empire of Death, man. That's it's heavy.
Heavy title, yeah. It was kind of a riff of Marvel, or not Marvel's, Marvel's Avenger Infinity War 2019 movie.
It certainly was, actually. Only Sutek's not nearly as civic-minded as Thanos.
No.
Because, I mean, Thanos was killing a half of everybody for the best of reasons, wasn't he?
I don't remember.
I don't actually know. Yeah, I don't know either. I think he was. I think it was like, well, there's too many people. Why don't we just kill half of them? Whereas Sutek's just like, I'm the god of death. You're all going to die.
Full deck. Yep.
Yep. The full Monty. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll kick off with this.
All right.
It was entertaining enough, but blimey, were there enough plot holes to drive a 10-ton pyramid through by the end. It was like, what?
Yeah, it certainly did not wrap up in a neat and tidy package.
No, it did not wrap up in a neat and tidy package. So, I mean, I'm going to say I don't think we should spend a lot of time riffing through the plot holes, because I don't think that was the point, was it? I mean, there was so much that was like, that doesn't make sense. That is like, well, obviously, what isn't making sense is not what we're concerned with here. Or do you disagree?
If things come up, we'll address them, but dwell on them, because that's...
Yeah, if that way lies madness, yeah.
That's not where RTD is focusing at all.
Exactly. And what was he focusing on?
Not sure, really. I think he's trying to reset Sutek, for one, because RTD and his fellow travelers think that Pyramids of Mars has some baggage for contemporary audiences. But in doing so, I think he encumbered it with a lot more baggage. I don't think there's any way that you can cleanly divorce Sutek from Pyramids of Mars, or at least in the way that he's done it, to make it any sense.
Yeah, I think if that's part of what we're doing here, I think it's then weird to like weave in the Pyramids of Mars so tightly with the story, in that actually, you know, at one point in the story, the Doctor and Ruby settle down to watch a clip from the Pyramids of Mars, you know. So and I think I touched on this last week, but really, you can't appropriate ancient Egypt. It doesn't belong to anybody. Mm. They're literally all dead. It is literally a dead civilization that is no one's.
Well, the Egyptians believe it's theirs. The modern Egyptians claim ownership to it.
Yeah, only because they live on the top. Only because they live on top of it.
Right.
So, without being like a well-actually style history nerd, you know, the Arabs invaded Coptic Egypt in, you know, the 8th century and obliterated what was left, which was extremely little at that point, of anything that was ancient Egypt. I mean, which hadn't already been obliterated by the Christian monks who burned down the Library of Alexandria, you know, a couple of hundred years before them.
And Romans before them.
Yeah, and then Alexander the Great, Cleopatra was Greek. It's not an appropriatable civilization, in my humble opinion. I mean, I guess the only thing that I think is an actual issue is the amount of Egyptian stuff that is in the British Museum or in the Pergamon Island Museum in Berlin or wherever, you know. Hmm. Archaeologists took a lot of stuff because that stuff was basically for sale because nobody wanted it. But anyway, sorry, that's a huge digression.
The cultural appropriation really is on Bob Holmes's part.
Yeah.
I think Bob Holmes is saying that the Egyptian culture is based off the Osirians rather than RTD's saying really what happened is Sutek saw the Egyptian culture and appropriated it, which is clever.
I don't. Yeah, I think I think that's a red herring, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. He did dwell quite a bit on it, but...
He did. Yeah, no. Yep, you're right. Yep.
I guess the other major theme of the story is Ruby's birth mother. At the end, we have 15, 20 minutes devoted to that. And I thought that was very tonally off for RTD, insensitive. And I would feel very uncomfortable if I was the writer of this, writing it with the characters that I have established and Ruby's quote unquote real mom, while Carla just had to suffer through this. It seemed really insensitive and hurtful.
Yeah, I agree, actually. So weirdly, I agree with you, which is I usually do. I mean, I think what I took away from this is a couple of things, which is, you know, dovetails into what you just said. The first of which, it's clear that in some ways, since RTD gave up the show back in whenever it was, he's written a lot of other stuff. And he is a lot more... He seemed to, what seemed to be interesting him in this story was the story of Ruby and Ruby's search for her birth mother.
Right.
That, you know, and that scene where, you know, where Ruby sees her birth mother in the Starbucks or whatever it is, like, oh, is she going to come up and talk to her? I mean, that was genuinely quite an affecting scene. The setup to it was like nonsense in terms of like only just now. I mean, surely the ambulance would have been able to work out, would have had access to DNA scan. Anyway, whatever. It made no sense at all. Anyway, but the lead up was nonsense. But the actual, you know, the kind of story beats in that bit were kind of genuinely affecting and nicely written. But, and I think you put your finger on it really quite accurately, it was a soap opera storyline. So it wasn't a genuine examination of foster children and birth mothers and foster mothers and all that kind of stuff. It was a Coronation Street, Emmerdale Farm, EastEnders style storyline of like, who's my mother?
Mm-hmm.
So there's two things. One, I think it seemed to me that Russell is almost kind of not that interested in science fiction.
He's not interested in Doctor Who, really, other than appropriating bits and the pieces in the past and then trying to right what he sees as wrongs.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be something that excites him particularly in itself.
Mm-hmm.
I think he still loves Doctor Who. I think he's excited by the whole social media thing and kind of seeding clues and, you know, getting people to talk about stuff. I think he likes all that.
Right.
But what he really likes doing is he likes writing human drama. And the kind of human drama he really likes writing is kind of soap opera drama. So not realistic drama, but drama of kind of big emotions and emotional conundra. I don't know what plural of conundrum is, that, you know, get solved at the end of the episode.
Right.
And that's what that seemed to me. It seemed to me to be a soap opera. And yeah, I mean, you're right. If this was a, you know, a realistic kind of Kathy Come Home style examination of birth mothers and foster children and birth children, yeah, it's horrible what Ruby was doing to her actual mother, her foster mother.
Right.
But it's not. This is a soap opera where that kind of stuff doesn't matter. What matters is the kind of emotional stuff, is the emotional stuff. And I think that's where I think he is.
It seems to me that RTD is really in tune with certain things, but then is really tone deaf on how other things come across. Like Ruby saying, oh, I finally have my real mom, when her actual real mom, Carla, is just out of camera shot. It's insensitive. This is the man who created Sarah Jane Smith Adventures, but then puts in the doctor's mouth when Ruby asks, oh, who are they? Who's that woman and the man with the hair? And the doctor says, they just traveled in the TARDIS. It's kind of a diss against the Tom Baker doctor and Liz Sladen and old fans, maybe. I don't know. He's trying to make something from the 1970s fit in today when there's no reason why he couldn't have just done this with the Beast or done it with a new villain. And if you extrapolate out from that how the doctor killed Sutek, basically, he's dragging a dog behind his car.
Yeah, which is kind of a mean thing to
and
do.
And it's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, I've got to take issue a little bit with you. The phrase, the kind of phraseology around the, those are just two people who used to travel in the TARDIS, I took that to mean that the Doctor at that point in the narrative of the show is very depressed about what is going to happen next. And therefore is not that, this is just the way I understood that line. Mm-hmm. He doesn't want to talk about his past with Ruby because he is certain at this point that he's going to fail. And also it's been his fault that this Sutek character is still around.
Yeah.
So if that's maybe me, maybe I'm being overcharitable there, but I mean, that's how I took it. Mm-hmm. It's like, I took it as like, I just don't want to explain this right now. Because I'm really at a bad point, so I'm just going to say it's just some people. I'll explain later. I mean, you could have just said I'll explain later. But I think in general, I think you're right. I think I don't think RTD is as interested in writing this show as he used to be. Now, whether that's because it's not been as good a relationship with Disney as he was hoping, I really do get the impression that there has been some high level. So the bit where the Doctor is like in a desert, all dressed up in desert clothes, and like goes into the tent, and there's the lady
for the spoon scene. Yeah,
for the spoon scene. That's an opening scene.
Yeah,
that should have been the cold open for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I would put money on that. That was the original cold open that Russell wrote. And I would also put money on is some suit in Burbank or wherever Disney is based said like, no one's going to understand that. You had a big climax at the end of the previous episode. You need to resolve that climax, move that cold open, put it halfway through. Actually put it, you know, put it in the narrative. Have it chronologically in the narrative. Mm. So I think my take is that it's a combination of really just wanting to get back to writing soap operas again, or, you know, being that kind of writer is something that Russell has found himself really better at and wanting to do. And I think it's possible this experience has not been as fun for him as it should have been, because we've not had enough episodes. I think that's clear. And I think that the cleverness that we have expected from this show, which went way too far with Moffat because he's far too clever for his own good, but you know, the ingeniousness of the narrative that we've come to expect over the last decade or so, I haven't really felt has been hugely present in the past 8 episodes. And where it has been present, where the show has, ooh, look at me, I'm being ingenious, we get something that's kind of gesturally clever, like, you know, 79 yards, which is like, none of that made any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, I'm sort of agreeing with you and disagreeing with you slightly. I think we need some new writers on this.
Yes.
And those new writers need to be people who aren't that interested in retconning in Sutek to everything. Because why? I mean, I think you're exactly right. There's no point in trying to address whatever things people might feel uncomfortable with old classic Doctor Who, because A, you know, someone like Robert Holmes and Philip Hinchcliffe, men who were born in the 1920s and 1930s, or 40s, I think, for Hinchcliffe, and it's a completely different world that they were coming
right.
from in terms of their impulses. Plus, you know, Hinchcliffe and Holmes were like, okay, what are the Hammer movies that everyone knows
right.
about? We've got Dracula, we've got The Mummy, we've got Frankenstein, I guess there's King Kong. They're just going through those movies and they're rewriting them as Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, this is Doctor Who's version of, you know, the Hammer, The Mummy,
mm-hmm.
of Curse of the Mummy. That's all it is. It's not appropriation.
It's Hammer
it's
appropriation.
Just, all they're doing is just rewriting Hammer films.
Right.
So to try and, like, weren't those old men, or actually young men at the time, weren't those young men a bunch of racists? No, they weren't. I mean, I guess, yes, they were, but, I mean, actually, no, they weren't. So, yeah, I mean, we talked about this last time. You know, it really should have been the Beast,
mm-hmm.
which would have made so much better sense to me, really.
It would have made better sense, at least with the toy maker and the maestro. I see no connection whatsoever between Sutek, the toy maker, and the maestro.
No, neither do
or
I.
The Star Beast, yeah. You know, Beep the Meep, or you know, whomever, or what was on Wild Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
You know, though Wild Blue Yonder was, I think, genuinely good.
Yeah.
A good script.
Yeah.
So that David Tennant trio was, I think, fairly well received. I wouldn't have had him be an actual incarnation or regeneration of the Doctor, but you know, that's over and done with. But another tonally thing, going back to The Empire of Death, that I think is really missing the part is with RTD bringing back Roger Ap Gwilym and almost celebrating that this fascist was able to have compulsory DNA registration in 2046, and that's how they were going to discover Ruby's mom. You know, sort of like, yay, fascism, everyone has to register their DNA, so now we can know who your mom is, Ruby. And it's sort of like, how is he the most dangerous prime minister in history? We've only been told, okay, he's discussed in talk shows that he wanted to launch nukes, but that was undone with 73 yards with Ruby.
Right.
But no, that wasn't undone, because now in 2046, he actually was prime minister, and prime minister long enough to enact compulsory DNA testing.
Yeah, I mean, it's complete hand-wavium, tell, don't show stuff, basically.
Is it hand-wavium writing?
Yeah, exactly. We needed a whole episode of the battle against Robert Ap Gwilym. He's really a character who's kind of mentioned in passing, and his demise, or whatever it was, in 73 Yards was also kind of nonsense. It's not a character that I feel is a character at all. It's simply a way of finding out who Ruby's mother was.
It was also a reason why Ruby was spooky in 73 Yards, or why there was this poltergeist or whatever version of her old self was 73 yards away.
Yeah, so there weren't enough episodes for that to become something that was meaningful in terms of the story, unfortunately, for me. And again, so I get what he's doing here. He's doing like the anti, I can't remember what the latest, what was the last Star Wars movie called? I can't remember what it's called. I mean, like those movies.
I don't know, where
instead of the girl from Tatooine who we think is just normal, like, she's the daughter of the Emperor. And I think a lot of criticisms about that whole retconning in the Star Wars movies is that people that we thought were incredibly ordinary actually end up to be incredibly special.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes the whole Star Wars narrative, as it is, nonsense, because everyone's the son of the Emperor,
right,
or the brother of Darth Vader, or blah, 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 etc., etc., etc. So I think what Russell's doing here is he wants to do the opposite. Is what is special about Ruby is that she is not special.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that's a piece of soap opera writing. It's honoring people who are not special, who are not noble, who are not Time Lords, who are not, you know, the daughters of whatever character we might have thought that Ruby was the daughter of, which is great. I mean, that's a very laudable thing to try and do. However, it makes absolutely no sense for me in terms of what we've learned about Ruby, is that nobody can find out who her mother is. Well, actually, all you got to do is like go slightly forward in time, look at a DNA database, and bang,
right,
you find out who her mother is. It's that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's that easy, then just for give one example, the ambulances in Boom would have gone, yeah, your mum's like, what's her name?
Right.
It makes no sense.
So I like that Ruby's mom, Louise, was just an ordinary woman. But I don't like that, okay, every time Ruby thinks about her mom, she sees snowflakes and time stops.
Again, it's setting up that Ruby is not ordinary in the most kind of, you know, in the strongest way possible, only to suddenly turn around and go like, actually, no, you know what? I'm not going to explain why no one can find out her mother. I'm not going to explain why there's snowflakes whenever she mentions her mother. I'm not going to explain any of that. All I'm going to say is that she's not ordinary at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just say that. You have to show it as well. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where this is falling down for me.
And I don't know why a 15-year-old teenage girl has a Munkus Mysterious hood that is identical to Suktek's acolytes.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Let's rewind back to the early 2000s and imagine what a teenage mother dresses like when she leaves her baby on the doorstep of a church.
Rose Tyler.
Yes, she would have had a hoodie,
right?
But it would have been hot pink,
right?
She wouldn't have dressed like a Scottish widow. It's, you know, that's a deep cut for the Scottish widows adverts from the late 1990s. And you know, the whole she's pointing. Why is she pointing? She's pointing at the sign that says Ruby Road on it. Why is she doing that? I mean, it makes no sense.
And who would have seen her point to know that that's what she's naming her child?
Exactly. And if that's what she's pointing at, okay, let's game this. Okay, so the Ruby mother knows that she's on film. So in order to make sure that Ruby is called what she wants Ruby to be called, which is Ruby, apparently, weirdly. Mm-hmm. She points at, so luckily, the road that she's walking down at that particular point is the name that she wants the baby to be called. So she points at that, knowing that someone has caught that on VHS tape, and then that tape will be appropriated by the foster mother of this child that she's leaving, presumably also possibly to freeze to death on a church door.
Right.
And therefore the daughter will be called Ruby. I mean, that doesn't make sense for me in any way.
Well, and that's not how it happened. I mean,
I'm kind of gaming what maybe the thought processes were of the teenage mother. It really doesn't make sense at all.
She would have pinned something to her blanket.
My name is Ruby. Call her Ruby. Her name is Ruby. She wouldn't have creepily pointed into midair.
Right.
She wouldn't be a scary looking character. She would be a sad, distressed, down at heel. I mean, maybe I'm over glamorizing what I think, you know, teenage mothers are like.
She's just about to give her, or had given up her child. She is going to be, I would imagine, sad and distressed. And if you're doing the soap opera vibe,
true,
that is exactly what you'd lean into. You wouldn't be leaning into, oh, she's this doppelganger monk of acolyte of Suktek.
Yeah, I mean, you'd be so, again, I mean, I think we're being kind of misdirected to think that Ruby is special in some kind of way. But the misdirection is nonsense. I'm trying to think of the right kind of metaphor, but, you know, it's misdirecting us to something that makes no sense whatsoever. And then when it says, "Whoa, no, actually, you've been misdirected," it's like, no, we haven't. You've just said something that's the complete opposite of what you've been implying, that is not actually supported by any information that you've given us beforehand.
Right.
Russell, mm-hmm. If you're listening. So, yeah, I mean, how amazing would it have been if that mother had been dressed like Rose Tyler, mm-hmm. You know? That would have been a real callback.
We would have put everything abuzz.
Yeah, it would have been great.
Yeah, exactly.
The other thing, I mean, I was overexcited about my own theories, but, you know, I was really into the possibility that, you know, Suktek latched onto the TARDIS during Wild Blue Yonder.
That would have made a lot more sense than latched on after Pyramids of Mars.
But the whole, you know, I mean, I think we've all seen it on social media the past few days or so. Fans are just finding this impossible to compute and also kind of laughable.
Right.
And, you know, it's like pictures of, you know, Adric on top of the TARDIS. Like, well, he's obviously having sex with Suktek. And that, you know, that it's just, you know, it doesn't compute, basically.
It's dumb, basically.
It's dumb. What would have computed really nicely is that that floating corpse was the corpse of Suktek, and he's sublimed his spirit into the kind of outside universe where the antimatter monsters live, or whatever lives outside the universe, mm-hmm. and became a god, and then was able to jump back on, recognize the TARDIS when it arrived, and then was able to... That I like that. That makes sense to me.
And it also works well for why we haven't seen Suktek's Susan Twist...
At all. Ever.
Yeah, throughout time until now. But it does make sense post Wild Blue Yonder.
Exactly.
Except you couldn't do the Mavity thing. You would have to do the Mavity at the end. And Mavity is another loose thread. I imagine we're going to pick up Mavity Mrs. Flood next series. But after this series, I wonder what's the point. But I'll put that aside for now.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why Sutek gave a rat's ass about Ruby's mother's name. But the doctor, as soon as they found out who Ruby's parents, biological parents were, he dumps her. He kicks her out of the TARDIS. And it was really pathetic at the end where she's going, I love you. And it's sort of like, what? Where did that come from? That's just that. No, you didn't earn that. And that's not what's been going on in this series at all.
Absolutely.
It is more Donna Noble than Rose Tyler, put it that way.
There's a lot of unearned emotion in this, which is a really unpleasant hangover from the Chibnall era, where all the emotion was like, what, like the Doctor and Yaz are suddenly lovers?
Right.
Well, where did that come from? That is something that's being told to us, not something that's being shown to us. And I agree with you there. I think that chemistry is okay between Chuty and Millie. It's not great, but you're right. You know, they're not. It's not a Tennant-Rose relationship.
Mm-hmm.
For a start, it's obvious that the Doctor is mainly gay, probably bi, but mainly,
I think mainly. I don't think there's any bi at all. I think it's gay.
Mainly gay.
He's gay.
So,
yeah.
So if Ruby's has got any eyes in her head, she would realize that, you know, that they haven't got that kind of relationship, and they've not spent enough time, as far as we're concerned, for them to have some kind of loving best friend relationship either, really. They're kind of mates who've hung around, and now she's found a birth mother, and like, he's like, fine, okay, off you go. She goes, okay, yeah, I'm going now.
Yeah. I just sort of like, he literally dumps her because she's no longer interesting. That's the takeaway I got from it.
Which, if that's the takeaway you get, let's write that and let's give this Doctor some kind of Capaldi-esque nuance and a weakness that makes him an interesting character.
Right.
Let's have him be, you know,
a jerk.
A sixth doctor jerk from time to time. Mm-hmm. And like, okay, yeah, bye, off you go, don't really care. You know,
you're not a cute guy, you're not interested anymore, I'm going to go find the rogue, you know, basically.
I'm going to go find rogue. I mean, you know, the way that Ten kind of treated Martha, you know, he was kind of a dick to Martha. That made him a more interesting character. This 15th Doctor is such a weeping saint in every way that he's not that interesting. I would like some light and shade with him.
Yes.
That I don't think we've got from this. I have a couple of points.
Go for it.
One of which, and this is something I didn't notice, this was pointed out to me by me hanging around on social media. If we rewind all the way back to Rose in 2005, to that episode, apparently, and I haven't rewound back to that episode myself to check that this is true, but I've got no reason to disbelieve it. Clive, the kind of Doctor Who internet nerd, at one point says the Doctor has only one constant companion, and Rose says, who? And he says, death.
Mm. Sure.
So I think this, in some ways, this is the baleful influence of Stephen Moffat. Stephen, if you're listening, sorry to call you baleful, but sometimes you are. I think, in some ways, RTD is like, oh, hang on. You know, if this is something I've been working on since I very first started on the show. The Doctor's constant companion through all his adventures has been Death. Who is Death? It's Sutek. Right. Okay. Let's make sure. Let's have Sutek be his companion through all of his adventures. There's a sense that he's just trying to be too clever here. You know, he's referring himself back to something that he wrote, you know, getting on for 20 years ago, and then saying, oh, this is something that I've been thinking about all these years.
For 50 years is what he told DWM.
Yeah, which is kind of not, to be honest, really. I think he's trying to be too clever. I did see something else, though, that I liked and kind of started to retcon this a bit for me, even though I think it doesn't really in the end, and it's still a kind of a dog. You see what I did there, episode?
Yeah.
Is that the hairy Sutek face that we see in episode one of Pyramids of Mars is kind of different from the Sutek face that we see in the final episodes of Pyramids of Mars. And someone on the social media said, well, okay, well, maybe that hairy face that we see in that first episode is the Sutekh from The Empire of Death. And basically, because of timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly stuff, the Sutekh is kind of bootstrapping himself. And he has gone back in time to grab onto the TARDIS at the beginning of Pyramids of Mars in order to try and stop the Doctor doing what already was going to happen to him. It's, I mean, you get where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Which I think is a nice, it's a nice little thought experiment. It doesn't really help that much, unfortunately.
I think you're putting more work into it than RTD at that point.
Yeah, and I think this was on the thread that I was reading that was kind of discussing this. That was the general conclusion. It's like, well, yeah, that could be the case. But, I mean, we're kind of doing RTD's work for him at this point. And so why should we? Why not just take it at face value? So
I want to touch back to the way that RTD brought back Susan Twist into the UNIT fold. And she wasn't a member of UNIT, but yet she was hanging around laughing with Kate Stewart at the end. But Harriet Arbinger was not there. The other Sutekh acolyte, you never saw her again. And she was a throwaway character for the sole purpose of reading that one death mantra of Sutekh to UNIT and then being it. And she doesn't return after the universe is reset.
Right, so she gets zapped, right? She's in the TARDIS, she gets zapped by like a bolt of energy or something, I seem to remember. But she is not de-dustified.
So, right, white woman gets de-dustified, the black woman doesn't.
Yeah.
Either it wasn't filmed or wasn't written, or RTD has a real blind spot about this, and I felt very uncomfortable the way that he was handling Carla's emotions by ignoring it and just making her put on a brave face or just not even touching upon it,
ignoring it.
And it's the same sort of thing that he did with Martha, I felt. I think he has a problem. And simply casting a black man as your lead isn't going to solve that for you.
Right, right. Yeah.
So talk about useless characters. We look at Rose Noble and the whole UNIT squad is firing at the TARDIS, firing at Sutekh and his minion. And what is Rose Noble doing? She's playing
Candy Crush
on her iPad. It's sort of like you gave the 10-year-old or the teen boy wonder a machine gun scooter. And what do you give Rose, who's... I don't know what age she is anymore. I thought she was a high school age student, but I guess she's old
enough to be a member of UNIT.
Yeah, work experience or whatever with UNIT.
Right.
She's just swiping on a tablet. It's tone deaf.
Yeah, I thought that.
And I feel like the whole episode was pretty tone deaf. He had the beats that he wanted and screw everything else.
Yeah, I think you're right there. I think, you know, charitably, one could say, well, Rose was working the kind of sentry guns that were firing from the ceiling. Maybe that's what she was up to. But it wasn't clear.
No.
And, I mean, I think I said last week, I don't know why she's working at UNIT. Just because you met the Doctor.
Well, you're in well, now. That's Russell's rule.
Yeah, you're the daughter of one of the Doctor's mates.
Yeah.
You get to join UNIT, whether you're qualified or not. I mean, I guess Joe Grant got to join UNIT because her uncle pulled some strings at the Foreign Office. But that's an acceptable way to join a paramilitary organization.
And she also grew into the role.
That's true. No, exactly. And I'm kind of being facetious.
There.
Yeah, she's only there because we want her there. And when I say she's there for representation,
that's what RTD is about right now, which is fine. But give your characters something to do other than embarrass them.
Yeah, absolutely. There's no point in just doing representation for representation's sake. If they're just standing around looking like a gormless teenage girl, then you're not really helping the cause that much.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. No, I agree. She was. That was. And, the whole thing with Ruby's mum, it was just reminding me of watching an episode of EastEnders from 1988 or something. It's just a kind of like, and, you know, we need some emotion. This needs to be an emotional thing. Shit, there's a foster mother that we're also emotionally invested in. Let's just not give her anything to do. Let's just ignore her, not give her any lines, and just pretend that it's not a thing. Because obviously, you know, if you don't speak, If you're not in the scene, then you're not in the scene. So we don't worry about you.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if we're going to have characters that we like and characters that we care about, if we're being asked to care about Ruby's mum, and I can't even remember her name at this point. What's Ruby's mum's name? The foster mother?
Carla.
Carla. We've been really told to care about Carla, apart from when it doesn't matter to the story, which is should be when it should matter the most.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you are so admirably pointing out, this is a really shitty thing that is happening to Carla. Everyone's like saying, like, well, you're just bad. You know, you're not, we don't care about you. The most important thing is the real mother.
Mm-hmm.
The biological mother is the most important thing that you can have,
right.
Which is really, you know, really, really kicks against the whole friend group. You know, your real family, your friends,
right.
The whole tenure of current culture, which is really against, and I'm not taking any side here, please don't at me on this, which is really against current culture, is really against biology.
Right.
Really against biology. Mm-hmm. For good or for ill, it's against biology.
Mm-hmm.
And this episode is like, biology is the most important thing. From the very first time that we've met this character, she's been desperate to find not her mother who's brought her up,
right,
or a baby, but her real mother. And the real mother is the person who biologically borned you and then gave you up at the blink of an eye, dressed like a Scottish widow on Christmas Eve, when you could have frozen to death very, very easily, because unusually for Christmas Eve in England, it was snowing, which it right. never does.
Right.
So anyway, yeah.
Yeah, but you look at the biological bit, then Russell, I don't know why he's doing this, but he won't acknowledge that Susan is his biological granddaughter. He denies that he has children when Kate asks him. And why is it okay for Ruby to have biological parents, but it's not okay for the doctor to have a biological granddaughter, let alone children? And it seems to be signaling something, but I'm really oblivious to what it's signaling because the messages are mixed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, I agree. And, you know, I'll go into bat every day for Russell and, you know, what he's done for the show. And I'll also go into bat every day for his writing as well. I don't know what's gone wrong here, whether there's just been too much producing that he's had to do, too much show running, and that's kind of affected his writing, whether there's some, you know, Harvard graduate stuff shirt at Disney who's told him to, like, not do that, and he has to go, yes, when Disney say jump, I have to say how high. I don't know what the issue is here. It seems, charitably speaking, I'm going to say he's too busy and, you know, he's not been able to spend enough time writing this to really make it work. And he's wanted to put things in that really don't fit. And he's hasn't even really tried to make them fit. He's just kind of put them in.
Everything is supernatural. It's a fantasy show. It doesn't have to make sense. That's his explanation.
But then again, the whole everything is supernatural thing, we have not had that explained either.
The only supernatural things we've really seen was maybe 73 yards.
Yeah, well, goblins.
That's not supernatural. That's fantasy.
Well, true. Okay. All right. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. If we started this whole thing with Wild View Yonder and the salt mm-hmm. stuff and the end, big end of the universe, blah, 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 that this could have made this better for me.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that we have to take this all the way back to 1975
yeah.
or 1911, it's just silly, basically.
Well, my theory of what's gone wrong with RTD is he surrounded himself by yes people.
I was going to say, yes, men, yes, people.
Though. Yes, people. And if you look at the writer's almanac or whatever he wrote, co-wrote based off of emails back and forth with Benjamin Cook.
Oh, yeah, with Ben Cook. Yeah, yeah. The writer's tale.
Writer's tale. Benjamin Cook is back in here. He's the one who did the cut down edit of Pyramids of Mars. He's the one who interviewed RTD in DWM regarding the Empire of Death and the Pyramid of Mars. We have the same production team behind there that they all think RTD is a genius, and he really, just like Moffat, needs someone to say, that doesn't work. No. He needs someone to stand up to him and say, no, you aren't as brilliant as you think it is. What are you trying to say here? You realize you have conflicting messages, and it's not dramatic conflicting messages. It's just sloppy confliction.
He needs someone to bop him on the nose with a rolled up newspaper, like you do with a naughty god from the beginning of time.
Yeah. And yeah.
Actually, that's what they should, instead of a lead, they should have had like a giant newspaper and they just boshed Sutek on the nose with it.
They shouldn't have had Sutek at all.
That's true.
So I really don't mind how Russell and Moffat and Chibnall all wanted to change Doctor Who and make it contemporary, whatever. But I really have problems with going back and mining the past and just not letting the past be. It's okay to take the Daleks or Cybermen or whatever and tell a new story about it. But the retconning, the revisionist history... Yes, things are problematic, but they can be problematic.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, someone should have said to him, do you really want to use Sutek? Does that actually work? And
I mean, do you want to base your new franchise on Disney, on a 50-year-old property, which you think is culturally inappropriative, and combined with an ITV documentary series about birth mothers?
Yeah, yeah.
That's not a winning concept.
No, it's not. And again, I can only imagine that as you've said, people might have said that or even thought that. But he went, no, it has to be Sutek. It has to be Sutek. I want to have Sutek. I've been working on this since 2005, you know, blah, blah. I've been thinking about this for 50 years. Mm. And they've gone, fine. Yeah, oh, great. Yes, yes. You're the boss. It's Sutek it is.
Who fans will buy anything?
Yeah, fans will buy anything. And again, you know, my mythical stuffed shirt in Burbank also is going like, yeah, Sutek. Yes, I don't know who that is either. Yes, have him. It makes whoever you put in, it doesn't make any sense to me. Just make sure there's a big explosion at the end and then we're good.
I think the problem with using Sutek is in abandoning the Osirians is that was interesting. What Sutek is now wasn't interesting.
Just a big bad.
I think they tried to have a scene similar to Tom Baker being psionically blasted with the green eyes up against the wall in the tomb with Shooty's doctor crawling, cringing, or curled up on the floor. But everyone else was unimpacted by it, so you didn't have that tension. Sutek was a lot more ominous, scary in Pyramids than he ever was in Legend or Empire.
Yeah, Legend of Ruby Sunday, yeah.
So...
yeah, I'm just going to throw in another thing from the forums,
okay,
which I think is actually kind of interesting, which is Mrs. Flood.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I realized last week, which is she's dressing up like Clara. Of course, this week she's dressing up like Romana One. So that's interesting. I'm going to call it now. I don't know whether this is true. I think Mrs. Flood is the mistress of the land of fiction, and this is all fiction.
Hmm.
Ah, gotcha there. It's all a story. Yeah, it's all a story that's been written by someone. And he's going to defeat Mrs. Flood. And it's all going to be back, all the way back to that Troughton episode. And none of it will have happened.
Great.
There you go. Anyway. No.
Sort of like 73 Yards. It never happened.
It never happened. Or did it? Anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I was pretty down on this episode, and the kind of mysterious, ooh, it's going to end in terror and horror from Anita Dobson there, that fell flat for me, because is it though?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just going to be something that was as unsatisfying as the previous 45 minutes I've just watched? I don't know. We'll see.
When the stakes are so high and you wipe out Kate Stewart and the entirety of UNIT and all of creation, every universe everywhere, you know there's going to be a big reset, and the stakes are meaningless at that point. And RT does it every time. Their stakes are so high that they're meaningless.
Well, I'll have to say, my dear lady wife, who watched this with me, did think that Kate Stewart had actually died.
Hmm. Well, okay.
So, point I mean, taken. And Amanda she's definitely a not we. And she was like, how could they kill Kate Stewart? I didn't say, well, no, she's going to come back at the end, because
mm-hmm.
I'm not that kind of person.
Right.
So anyway, so I mean, Amanda was taken in by that. I don't know how long she was taken in by that for. But if we're treating my wife as like a sort of a first of a new viewer to this show, then I don't know, maybe this worked for other people.
A neutral viewer.
unfortunately, I've not been able to battle test this on my next door neighbor, Lo, because after having watched Boom, she's declared Doctor Who to be too scary. Yeah. And doesn't want to watch any more of it.
I can understand that, because Boom really was, if for a young person of, you know,
eight,
that age, was pretty nasty.
Yeah. So
with the compressed tubes of people.
Yeah, that was horrible. So yeah, so I don't know whether that's a good thing, whether that's a vindication, like Doctor Who's still scary. I think possibly not, because Doctor Who should be just scary enough that you want to watch more of it, even though you're scared. And I think Lo just doesn't want to watch more of it because it's too scary.
Yeah.
I don't think she is, has been engaged enough in the plot to have that scariness be overridden. I mean, she may, I mean, I don't know. It's summertime. She wants to play outside, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, that may change.
Maybe this fall when Christmas rolls around.
As the nights draw in. Exactly. Yeah. So who knows? Anyway. Goodness, right, there you go then.
Yeah.
Empire of Death, man. Empire of Death.
So, an abbreviated season. Not really sure what to make of it. I have really mixed feelings whether this was a good series or not. I think of the eight stories, including Church on Ruby Road, maybe a quarter of them I thought were top-notch, and that would be Boom and Dot and Bubble, and top-notch for this series, maybe not all time.
Yeah, for me, it would be Dot and Bubble and Rogue.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay. I like that one. Those would be my two top ones. I think the rest of it being subpar, I'm afraid. Yeah. Especially, I think this climax has been unnecessarily not good. We always do this, but that's because we care about the show. We always suggest tweaks to the writing that would have improved the episode.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely agree with you. Bringing Sutak was a bad idea. Bring back the Beast. But if you have to bring back Sutak, let's just backdate him to Wild Blue Yonder. Works for me. That would have risen my appreciation of this episode considerably, not to the level of one that I actually liked, but certainly one that would make a little bit more sense.
Better narrative cohesion.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Right.
So, there we go. Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 251 of the Metabulous 2 podcast. I have been trying to find a reason as I turn to dust with Ben.
And I have been attaching a long dog leash to a god from the beginning of time.
So horrible.
And then just dragging it through space or something, and so it dies. I don't know what happened.
Whatever. Not a good look, Doctor.
Not a good look.
Not a good look.
Not a good look, no. Plus, Ruby would have had to duck right under Sutek's jaws, and he could have easily just snapped her head off.
Well, it's just... I just don't understand why he cared about her name. I mean, we already had one impossible girl with Clara. If Sutek was on the TARDIS all this time, wasn't Clara a big enough impossible girl trigger to raise his hackles?
It doesn't make sense, man. And not in a good way. There's plenty of Doctor Who that doesn't make sense. This doesn't make sense in a way that is not satisfying.
Okay.
All right.
All right. Take care, Zeus.
Yeah, okay. Bye, everybody.
Bye. Lord, it's a real motherfucker, yeah. Make you wanna run for cover, yes, it will. And if you look, you will discover, yeah. Lord, it's a real motherfucker, yeah. Ow! Good job.